In a highly developed work for a symphony orchestra, in which the composer has written down every single note, as well as the speed and the manner in which all the notes are to be performed, how is it that interpretations differ so markedly from one another? Let's take the beginning of Beethoven's Third Symphony, the Eroica. Beethoven has indicated how fast the music is to be played, and even with what feeling, by writing at the beginning of the score the Italian words Allegro con brio, meaning fast with fire. How is it then that one conductor produces these results? Here's a more leisurely view. Obviously, then, despite Beethoven's rather specific instructions in his score, there is still considerable latitude in the ways in which the music is performed. It would be a simple matter to say that the interpretation depends merely upon the temperament of the conductor. But that really just begs the question. Let's see what actually determines the differences among various performances. Beethoven's score was clearly marked allegro, meaning fast. But immediately there arises the question, how fast? And there's the first source of differences among various interpreters. The beginning of the Amen chorus of Handel's Messiah emerges this way in Leonard Bernstein's hands. Interpretation of those same notes by Eugene Ormandy. Besides the difference in speed, the musical term is tempo, there was also a difference in the degree of loudness, that is, in the dynamics. So a second variable is introduced. There are still others. There's the matter of rubato, of phrasing, and also the influence of tradition. We'll go into each of these in turn. Let's go back to the matter of tempo, or speed, and its variants. It's understandable that there should be differing interpretations of markings such as allegro or andante, which after all are not very exact. Until the invention of the metronome, which took place during Beethoven's lifetime, the composer had only those general and inexact markings to depend upon as indications of the speed at which he wanted his works performed. And going back earlier in time, we find that Bach hardly ever wrote even a tempo indication in his music. He left merely the bare notes, and it's up to the performer to determine whether a piece is fast or slow. As a result, we have such a wide diversity of interpretations as the following. Here's one section of his Passion According to St. Matthew, in the tempo chosen by one conductor. Tempo at which another conductor conceives that same music left unmarked by Bach. Demonstrates the fact that there are no absolutes in the matter of the tempo at which a piece of music can be played. And now another element has to be considered. It's not merely the basic tempo that's important. There are often changes of tempo within a piece of music. As we've seen, even when a composer tries to specify merely a single basic starting tempo for any one movement, the tempo emerges differently in different hands. Imagine how difficult it is, then, for a composer to specify changes of tempo within a movement. Thus, we have another variable that must be left, ultimately, in the hands of the performer. For example, it's often the custom for there to be a slowing down during the closing bars of a piece of music. It's known as a retard. Now, the question is, how much of a retard shall there be? How slow should the tempo become? And at what rate shall it become slower? Here's the ending of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 6. Notice the relative lack of retard in this performance, conducted by Simon Goldberg. Here's the same music conducted by Pablo Casals. Notice how much more he slows down at the very end. Within a musical passage, the performer, especially in music of the Romantic period, sometimes slows down slightly, or lingers over a few notes, and then speeds up slightly. It's all done so subtly that the basic tempo is not changed. This is known as tempo rubato, literally, robbed time. It gives an expressive quality to the music. Here's a prelude for piano by Chopin. Try to beat time to this music, and you'll see how the pianist constantly varies the speed. Another source of differences in interpretation, as I've suggested, is the matter of dynamics, or loudness and softness. Notice the difference in loudness between these two performances of Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony. Here's the approach of Sir Thomas Beecham. Same music conducted by George Sell. Some of the difference stems from the faster tempo, but notice how the loudness of this interpretation gives the music an entirely different feeling. Dynamics are also subject to change within a performance. Just as music can become faster or slower, it can also become increasingly louder or softer. Brahms, in his first symphony, has a passage in which the music becomes gradually faster, while at the same time varying in dynamics from very soft to loud, back to soft, and loud again. Notice the number of variables that have to be determined by the conductor. At what level of softness shall the music begin? How loud shall it become? At what rate shall it become louder? How quickly shall it become softer? And then at what rate shall it become loud again? And while all this is going on, at what rate shall it become faster and how fast? Here's the result in the interpretation of Eugene Ormandy. And here's the way all those variables emerge in the hands of Bruno Walter. Indicated in his score that there was to be a crescendo, and you saw how the extent of the crescendo differed in the hands of two different conductors. But in the music of Bach, there are very seldom any indications of dynamics. They're all left to the discretion of the performer. Here's what happens in the closing chorus of his Cantata No. 106, Gotteszeit ist die allerbeste Zeit. In this portion of Felix Prochaska's performance, note that the chorus remains at the same level of loudness. Notice what Hermann Scherchen does with that same music. During the florid passages on the word Amen, he has the voices suddenly become quiet, and then he gives an unexpected emphasis to the repetition of the Amen. None of these changes in dynamics can be found in the score. They're all added by the conductor. There is still another possible variable among different performances, one that's more subtle than either tempo or dynamics, and that is the matter of phrasing. In essence, it means the manner in which the notes are grouped together in performance. For example, the final movement of Tchaikovsky's Pathetique Symphony, as conducted by Leonard Bernstein, has no break between the phrases. Notice that the melodic line is continuous. But Eugene Ormandy breaks that same melody into two phrases. Now we come to a few aspects of the influence of tradition upon interpretation. The Passion According to St. Matthew by Bach contains an extended solo for the violin, accompanied by the string orchestra. In this performance, notice the relatively steady tempo and, above all, the cleanliness of the articulation, that is, the lack of sliding between one note and another. But now, in this performance, notice not only the slower tempo, but also the slowing down and speeding up. But above all, notice the sliding from one note to another in the solo violin. Here's the 19th century romantic tradition applied to 18th century Baroque music. Another factor, stemming from tradition, that goes to make up a style of performance is the vibrato. It consists of alternately raising and lowering the pitch very rapidly. You can see it being done as you watch the left hand of a violinist or of the player of any stringed instrument. Here's an example of a single artist, the violinist David Oistrakh, playing music of two different schools and making a distinction between their stylistic demands. First, in the slow movement of Mendelssohn's violin concerto, notice the relatively rich tone and the fairly generous use of the vibrato. Here is the romantic tradition at work. Here's the same violinist in the slow movement of Mozart's violin concerto No. 4. Since Mozart was an earlier composer than Mendelssohn, notice that the tone quality is subtly adjusted so that it's not quite as rich, and the vibrato is diminished. Generally speaking, the tone, especially in the higher passages, is somewhat purer. This is more in keeping with the classical tradition. Generally speaking, when conductors perform works of the period of Haydn and Mozart, they do not use the full 19th century symphony orchestra. Yet differences can be found in the sizes of performing bodies, with differing effects upon the ear. Here's the beginning of Mozart's serenade, Eine kleine Nachtmusik, performed by a large body of strings. Notice the fullness of the sound. Same music performed by only 12 instruments. The use of a smaller group of players, while it makes a less full sound, increases the clarity of the parts. Finally, there remains to be considered what might be regarded as a lost tradition. It stems from the historic fact that when Bach or Handel, or any other composer of the Baroque period, wrote the following rhythm, dum, 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 he really meant it to be played as follows, dum, da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. This is known as double dotting. And, according to this tradition, when the Baroque composer wrote the following rhythm, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, he really meant it to be played dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum. Now here's the way it works in a piece of music. I'm going to play for you the beginning of the first movement of the Suite No. 3 by Bach, exactly as he wrote it, and as almost every conductor performs it. Notice that the dominating rhythmic pattern at the opening of this piece is dum, da-da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum. Now here's the music performed as the rhythms were written. Thank you. notice how differently that same music emerges when it's played according to the tradition of the time in which it was composed. The effect is one of greater tension. Just a few of the factors that determine what we call interpretation.